he makes himself a target with this stuff. He comes across as the prototypical rich Republican.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
And we are both here in Washington, D.C.
And we're both very poor.
You know, here we are, Ken. You know, we just heard from Rush Limbaugh telling us what the Republicans really don't want people to think about the Republican nominee in 2012. And I don't think we should let anyone get the impression that this podcast is done by a couple of, you know, middle-aged, overweight white guys in Washington, D.C.
But we are.
Well, I was going to say, so I'm going to lose some weight and you can travel some more. It's great having you back here in D.C.
Yes, because we could look at each other's face and see how ridiculous what's going on. Mitt Romney, every time he does something big.
Hey, what a great week for Mitt Romney,
and,
huh?
And Florida by 14 points was a big victory.
It was.
Think of a week ago, we were talking about Newt Gingrich's momentum coming out of South Carolina, the fact that he was just, you know, on a roll. And
that was between the two debates.
Right.
And of course, the second debate sort of confirmed the Gingrich fall in the first debate. But go ahead.
Yeah, and then here we are, Mitt Romney, smashing victory, won almost every demographic. If you looked at South Carolina exit polls, Gingrich was winning almost everywhere. I mean, he was winning everything. And that seemed to turn completely obverse in Florida, except for the very conservative.
Obverse. I
obverse.
Love that word.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
that word. And, you know, it's funny how a 12, 13, 14 point win will make it look as though everybody voted in every category for a particular candidate. Now, there were exceptions in Florida. The group that described themselves as Tea Party,
right.
They were pretty evenly split. It was
right.
Almost no difference.
Very conservative.
The very conservative went clearly for Gingrich. And also the group that identified abortion as their number one issue. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a few minutes because I want to talk a little bit about how abortion is beginning to intrude into this campaign. But in Florida, apart from those distinct groups, Mitt Romney pretty much had it his way, except in the portion of the state up along the Georgia line, the Alabama line, the part of the state that's most like the Deep South, in which Gingrich did win. That's right.
Mitt Romney had a great week, had a great Tuesday. He may not have had a great,
great
Wednesday.
Tuesday night.
Yeah, exactly.
He had a great Tuesday night. And then exactly one morning later, before we were even 12 hours past the victory speech, really, he's out on television making this gaffe.
I'm not concerned about the very poor. We have a safety net there. If it needs a repair, I'll fix it. I'm not concerned about the very rich. They're doing just fine. I'm concerned about the very heart of America, the 90, 95% of Americans who right now are struggling, and I'll continue to take that message across the nation.
Now, you know, when you put it fully in context, he has said almost precisely this sentence before, verbatim. He has said, I'm not really that concerned about the very poor because there's the safety net. The very rich are doing just fine. And then he says, I'm for the vast
middle
majority
class, right?
of the middle class. There's nothing wrong with that. It's standard political boilerplate.
No, I know. But if you're going to take President Obama saying, if this is going to be about the economy, we're going to lose, that was a little out of context because it was John McCain, blah, blah, blah. You just, you know, I mean, everybody plays the game, and he should know that he's going to suffer the consequences as well.
Well, and look, Rush Limbaugh, who went after him, as we heard earlier, you know, for this gaffe and has gone after him many times before, he is no Mitt Romney fan in the first place. He would rather have some other kind of candidate.
Who can't win.
But this is the argument. And we saw one answer to this dispute in South Carolina where voters said, give us a stronger contrast. Don't give us somebody like Mitt Romney who seems too moderate. Give us somebody like Newt Gingrich who seems angry.
And who could beat Obama.
And who they believe in a debate would really clean up, would really, really knock Obama around the stage and then pose a greater contrast, which they believe would be more inspirational for voters in November and that more people would come out and they would win the election with a conservative they really believe in. We went down to Florida. We got the opposite judgment.
Complete opposite.
Complete opposite judgment, partly, largely, because people had been soured on Gingrich by $15 million worth of television ads dropped on them by Romney and the super PACs.
I do think it was more than that. I think there was part of it,
more than $15 million? There is a school that says it was more than $15 million.
But look, I was sitting in my hotel room watching all these negative commercials on TV, one after another, after another, and we're talking about all the millions of dollars that Romney spent bashing Gingrich, and that's true.
Of course, that was the super PAC, in parentheses.
Right, I'm sorry.
The super PAC.
Right, but I saw tons of anti-Romney commercials at one. Actually, a few seconds of each other, I saw an anti-Romney ad paid for by the Gingrich super PAC. Right after that, there was a Democratic-leaning ad which morphed Mitt Romney into Rick Scott.
The governor of Florida.
Governor of Florida, who's also very unpopular.
That's right. Well, elected in 2010, but down in the 30s in his approval now.
Well, he's older than that. Okay. Yeah. But I was saying that the fact is that everybody was, you know, just jumping on Mitt Romney in those ads. But also when that great line by Mitt Romney in the debate when he said, you know, he said, well, it just so happens that you also have investments in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And the look on Newt Gingrich's face, like, oh, man, you got me. And
you got me, Mitt.
And I had nothing to respond to.
Newt Gingrich had a terrible week in Florida, in large part because of those ads that we've already referred to and everyone's referred to. And also, I think, largely because the conservative media, and I'm talking here about Fox News and all the publications, Wall Street Journal,
National Review.
Standard, National Review in particular, just went after him, hammer and tongue, completely carpet bombed him, called him unacceptable. And then, of course, we had all these establishment figures like Bob Dole coming out and essentially saying the same thing.
Right.
So he had a terrible week. It showed up on Tuesday when Mitt Romney cleaned his clock in the actual primary.
14 points.
And then the very next day, Romney makes this gaffe about the very poor.
Right.
And it also seems as though an enormous outpouring of critical journalism comes down on Mitt Romney, as if to say, oh, no, we can't stand anybody pulling out in front in this race. We can't stand there being a true front runner. We want to keep this thing going.
Which is the old Sarah Palin argument. Not that Sarah Palin loves Newt Gingrich. She says, I would vote for Newt Gingrich if I had to, just to keep this going. And look, the media do not want this to end quickly. They do want a battle. Look, political junkies loved Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama going into April, May, and June because it's exciting. You don't want a cover like a John McCain who wins the Republican nomination really early and then you don't hear from him for months. So you do want it to go on, but of course the Republican Party establishment, whatever that is, Sterling doesn't want it to go on.
All right, and we are part of the media and we, in a sense, do want it to go on just for the vetting process, as Sarah Palin says. But here are some legitimate issues to talk about. One is this gaffe-prone thing that Mitt seems to have. The other one is...
When it comes to money, wealth, status, Mitt Romney seems to have this blind spot or just not realizing that these things will resonate with people. Say, wait a second, I don't think you're connecting.
No self-perception.
No.
He doesn't realize that if somebody comes up and says they're poor and need a job, getting out your wallet and handing them $50 is not really a national solution. But it's mostly a perceptual thing. It's mostly something that he might be able to work on. Another question, though, is whether or not he is ever going to connect with that very conservative core of the Republican Party, and we saw some real questions raised about turnout in Florida.
You know, that's a very good point, and we've seen this in other states too. Iowa, which did have a record turnout, but only nominally over 2008 when the Republican Party was so disenchanted, disaffected, and unhappy with Bush, the war, and the economy. So where is that anger and excitement we saw from the Republican faithful in 2010? I'm not seeing it in 2012.
By the way, have they figured out who won Iowa yet?
You know something? Well, first of all, we do know
those
that...
Those numbers are in now, is
we
that right?
do know... Well, here's another number that's in. Matt Straughn, the
Gone.
Republican Party
Minus one.
Chairman, resigned this week, and justifiably so. First of all, you know, Mitt Romney...
He kind of had to take the hit. He had to be the scapegoat.
Well, Mitt Romney won by 8 votes, then nobody voted,
then nobody won,
and then you had these counties that were not reporting, and then Rick Santorum won by 34 votes. If I were Rick Santorum, I'd be furious. I mean, I had a victory in the Iowa caucuses.
Oh, he lost a whole
take
week
it away
of
from
free,
me.
Free
right.
media
right.
as the great conquering hero who beat Mitt Romney. Now, we're only talking about a difference of 42 votes, and yet it's enormous in terms of the way, and here again, we're castigating ourselves, the media, the way we play these things. You win by one basket at the buzzer, you're the champion, and the other guy's a bum. So he hit, if you will, the buzzer beater basket in Iowa and got nothing,
right.
almost nothing for it.
Well, look what's coming up. I mean, Newt Gingrich obviously does very well in debates. There's no debate until February 22nd. He'll probably do well in the South, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas perhaps, but that's not until March 6th. What's coming up in February is a calendar that looks very friendly to Mitt Romney. He has the Nevada caucuses on Saturday. The Maine caucuses start on Saturday.
And then run for like a week.
And then you have Tuesday's caucuses in Colorado, Minnesota. Romney won all four of those in 2008, so this is probably very good-looking. Now, again, are we talking about a ton of delegates? No, we're not, but we are talking about momentum. We're talking about headlines. And even in a month that looks like a dearth of political news, even a victory in Maine, in Nevada, in, you know, in these smaller states, Colorado, could be great news. Just like with Obama against Hillary Clinton in 2008, he went after these little caucus states that were not a ton of delegates, but he won victory after victory after victory.
Well, and in that case, too, he was able to win a disproportionate number of the delegates, and those disproportionate shares added up across all those little states and eventually basically evened it out with losses in places like Pennsylvania and Texas and Ohio, even California and New York, so that Obama wound up being ahead in delegates, even though a lot of those wins were in places that didn't even have primaries. One place that is a middle-sized state and a huge swing state that is having a primary on February 7th is Missouri. But that's kind of an odd situation.
It is an odd situation because, one, it is a beauty contest only, meaning it has nothing to do
that's
with delegates.
That's because it's the show-me state.
Right. And and the way Missouri will choose delegates is in a caucus next month.
Later on in the month. Yeah.
But here's two things that's interesting. First of all, Rick Santorum is making a big push in Missouri for two reasons. One, it's the only primary coming up, even if it is only a beauty contest. And two, Newt Gingrich couldn't get on the ballot there.
He didn't get on the
ballot. When, you know, it's interesting when you saw the night of the Florida primary when they're holding up the signs, 46 states to go.
Except Missouri. And Virginia. And the other ones where we didn't manage to get our act together.
So watch Rick's...
This, by the way, parenthesis, for all those people who think the media have it in for Newt Gingrich and give him a hard time unfairly, when people say he doesn't have the organization, that's the kind of thing you're talking about.
Yes, but does Rick Santorum have the organization? Probably not, but you will see him next Tuesday, I suspect, trying to make a big deal, campaigning a lot in Missouri. Again, not about delegates, but about momentum and headlines. And he'll be the true conservative alternative to Mitt Romney because he's the only one on the ballot.
And this is a good place for him to do it, too, yeah. Because Missouri is a state where the abortion issue has been salient. And Rick Santorum is perhaps the one candidate in this entire race most associated with that issue, certainly since Michelle Bachmann dropped out. This has been a defining issue in Rick Santorum's career, and he will do very well among people who care about this issue. And it is a moment when those voters are likely to be motivated because we've had the abortion issue essentially raised back up into the national consciousness by a couple of surprise controversies. Susan G. Komen, which is a large breast cancer awareness and fundraising organization.
Completely non-political.
Which has always been thought of as completely non-political, but they did add a new vice president to their leadership.
Before you go there, and they've always given money to Planned Parenthood.
They've given lots of money to Planned Parenthood. It's not a major part of the overall Planned Parenthood budget, which is enormous, but they have been arm in arm in pursuit of women's health. So now Susan G. Komen gets a new vice president who is a former candidate for governor in Georgia,
quite a conservative woman, Tea Party, right?
Very pro-life, supported by Sarah Palin, one of the Mama Grizzlies of 2010. She comes on the board, and apparently there's been a lot of political change within that board. We now see their chairman resigning in protest because they have cut off their ties to Planned Parenthood. So we have reasons to think there'll be a lot of talking about abortion. There always is an issue around abortion in American politics, but we now can see this being potentially like what gay marriage was in the 2004 election.
Yes, two things. First of all, you see Newt Gingrich calling President Obama over and over again anti-religion, anti-religious, anti-Catholic, anti-M.
Anti-pasta.
But look, even though most polls show that everybody's concerned about the economy
and that will be the number one issue,
but there is perhaps maybe 5% of the electorate who's concerned about abortion,
Pennsylvania,
pro-right, Ohio,
We've seen Pennsylvania and Ohio turn on social issues in the past, even when economics were supposedly prominent.
Exactly right. So in other words, it may not affect a lot of voters, but it may affect enough voters to make a key difference in some key swing states. By the way, before we leave the presidential race, this is Groundhog Day. We're recording this on Groundhog Day, which means six more years of Donald Trump.
Yes, and Donald Trump gave us a little present today. He made everyone guess for several hours.
That was so bizarre.
And he told, apparently, some news organizations were given the hint that it was going to be Newt Gingrich who finally got the big, I can't believe we're talking about this, the big Donald Trump endorsement. Ken. But in fact, it wasn't Newt.
Yeah, first of all, it was political. It was the New York Times. Everybody was reporting that it would be Newt Gingrich, and that would make sense. Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum were the only guys who showed up for this since aborted, Donald Trump debate, and yet here he is endorsing Mitt Romney.
Exactly, and Mitt Romney essentially trashed him back in December and said, why would I debate with some showman? Yeah. What kind of stuff is this? And here we have Donald Trump endorsing Mitt Romney.
Okay, no.
Ken, I know you have the full explanation for this entire thing, so we'll look forward to seeing that in Political Junkie.
We will, right. Well, we did have votes, of course, in Florida, but we also had a vote in the Oregon's 1st Congressional District.
Now, this is exciting because we now know which member of Congress of 435 is least likely to show up for work in a tiger suit.
Right. And Ron, of course, is referring to former Congressman David Wu, the former Democratic congressman from Oregon's 1st District, who resigned.
This is Portland. We're talking about Portlandia.
Right. Who resigned his seat in August after being accused of sexual assault.
And many, many other things. But let's just stop at the tiger suit and the sexual assault.
Yes.
And we don't want to know how he got that suit.
Look, this seat has not gone for a Republican candidate since 1972. Wendell Wyatt, as you well remember.
Oh, I remember Wendell.
Oh, I tell you, I know.
He was... One fella.
Yeah, yeah. He was so funny. He was such a Wyatt. So anyway, so the Democrats were very nervous. They pumped in a lot of money to try to make the case that the Republican candidate was a Tea Party backer, which he was. And they didn't want
those Democrats. And they'll stop at nothing.
And they didn't want to repeat the day what happened to them in the Anthony Weiner's district in New York when the Republicans won that seat. And they said, look, even though it's a solidly Democratic seat, we're going to still pump in a lot of money. And Suzanne Bonamici won pretty handily.
Suzanne Bonamici, many expect her to be sworn in wearing normal clothing.
And while Suzanne Bonamici comes to Congress, enters Congress, we do have another female politician, Beverly Perdue, leaving public office. She announced this week she is not going to run for re-election as North Carolina governor.
One more sign that North Carolina, not so blue this year.
You're absolutely right. In 2010, for the first time since 1870, Republicans won control of the state House, the state Senate. Governor Perdue's numbers were really, really down. There are a lot of Democrats who say that Perdue not running is the best thing that could happen to the party because she was such a drag on the ticket. She only had 32% of the vote. Obama's chances of winning the state again were jeopardized because she'd be running again. She's no longer running.
And very few people think North Carolina is really out there for Barack Obama in 2012. So where are the Democrats having their convention this summer?
In North Carolina. In Charlotte. In Charlotte.
Inshallah. That it would be in North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
We should take note, too, of the passing of a milestone figure, really, in the history of Boston.
Absolutely. Kevin White, 82 years old, former four-term mayor. He was apparently on George McGovern's short list for vice president, along with Ron Elving, Ken Reardon, and everybody in the world. But Kevin White was most remembered when he was mayor of Boston during the 1970s, the turbulent 1970s, when there were anti-busing demonstrations, shall we say, pretty much riots.
No, South Boston rose up in objection to the federal court order for integration of the schools.
And it sounds hard to believe, but when Kevin White was first elected and when the second time he ran, his opponent was Louise Day Hicks, who was an anti-busing leader. I mean, busing was a big, big issue in Boston back there. Desegregation was a very hot topic, and I don't know if Kevin White handled it as well as he could, but he was the mayor during that time, and it was a really turbulent time for Boston, and Kevin White dies at the age of 82.
And political turbulence in our own time in the state of Texas, second largest state by population in the country, and they have just gotten four brand new seats in the House because of the reapportionment that follows every 10-year census. And that's going to raise them up to a 36-seat delegation, second largest in the House. And there's been a tremendous amount of struggle in the state over drawing the lines for those congressional districts because that obviously determines to some degree which party succeeds.
Right. And, of course, the Republican-controlled state legislature, along with Rick Perry, of course, loved the redistricting plan they originally passed that would give the Republicans at least three of the four new...
And maybe all four.
Perhaps, congressional seats. Then a three-judge panel said, you're undercutting growing minority strength, Latino strength in Texas, and perhaps violating the Voting Rights Act.
Of 1965.
Right.
And we should add that Texas already has a two-thirds, a two-to-one Republican majority in their delegation.
Right. But, of course, there were lawsuits. A lot of people felt that the Republicans were diluting the Latino vote, that perhaps maybe the district should be predominantly Hispanic given the Latino voting strength, the increasing voting strength in the state.
That's where the growth is. I mean, in essence, that's where the growth in Texas is.
Well, there's also increases in Republican areas as well. Anyway, the Supreme Court will take it up.
And the Supreme Court will eventually take it up. But in the meantime, there is some chance that a agreement could be reached, a negotiated agreement could be reached between the state and some of the groups that have filed suit, particularly because the court case that has been playing out here in D.C. in the Circuit Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia has not been going well for the state thus far. And some of the negotiating groups think that something could be worked out whereby the Hispanics would get some increased representation out of those four new districts, and maybe they would have a shot at winning three of the four.
And while we're talking about new members of Congress coming in, there's a veteran congressman about to leave, Dan Burton of Indiana, first elected in 1982. He's not the most liked guy in Congress. Democrats, of course, despise him. They remember what he did during the Clinton administration when he was investigating. He was the one, remember, who took the gun and shot a watermelon to reenact the Vince Foster
murder. Yes, which he continued to insist had never been explained by any of the official investigations.
But he's not beloved among Republicans either. Last time when he ran, he only got 30% in the primary. And so Burton's retirement means now there are seven Republicans not running for re-election. There are 11 Democrats not running for re-election, plus an assortment of Democrats and Republicans running for higher office.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Can you sing it? Can you guys sing it? All right. Not just me now, okay? Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesty above the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Wow, wow. Nicely done.